Episode 200. Thank you, everybody.
You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 4th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live while crashing Rand Paul's bipartisan coffee clatch. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Episode 200, I must add, so yay!
Yeah, episode 200. Thank you all of you for hanging on with us for 200 episodes. And we're going to start off today, Driftglass,
yes,
by deeply, deeply thanking everyone who donates $5 a month, $10 a month. Donates whenever they can.
Sends us stuff mail.
It's a miracle. And I owe so many people who sent snail mail contributions, letters and acknowledgments of those. And I've got a basket full of them. And as I've written to everyone, September with three kids in three different schools is busier than Christmas by a long shot. Yeah. So, but that month is over and I want to get to this. So it will be a priority.
I will also catch up on my thank you notes. There are still a few people that don't hate me. and even though I'm a Glenn Greenwald, for some reason, I just keep obsessing over him, except I really don't.
That's funny because someone asked me on Twitter, you know, I missed your conversation on Glenn Greenwald. Can you point me to an episode? And the only one I could really point to that where you really went off on Glenn Greenwald was the one where we had Bob Seska on.
Yeah.
Well, and other than that, I've kept Glenn Greenwald off of this podcast because I don't want to talk about him. So,
I know it doesn't seem that way to people who wait on a hot rock for me to say anything about Glenn Greenwald and jump into my comment section. And
but if you search for Glenn Greenwald at your blog, you haven't written about him in a while.
No, and I don't either praise or curse him. Other than when he starts to lie.
Yeah, I was going to say ad hominem. You are not an ad hominem Glenn Greenwald hater. I know that.
No,
yeah.
It's just it's when he says stuff that just ain't true. Because, frankly, I do think the NSA story is an important one. I say this in every post I write about Glenn Greenwald. The story he is trying to report, however big or small or whatever shape it takes, is an actual important consequential story that needs to be reported without fear or favor.
Constitutional consequences to our citizenry. Absolutely.
And it has its roots stretching back 50 years.
Absolutely. Yes, it does.
But when you start your critique with, and Barack Obama is worse than Dick Cheney, and anyone who thinks otherwise is a drooling imbecile, you turn me, I shut it right off. You're here to insult me, and you're obviously pimping a political agenda. And you're pimping a political agenda, frankly, that says the Tea Party should run the country.
Yeah.
And I know you are doing that because you said it on videotape. So I really don't care about peccadilloes. I do care about the story a great deal, but I really do object to a reporter who sabotages his own credibility by working out his petty grievances and lying.
On Twitter.
And then it's on Twitter. Well, lying on Twitter and lying on the air and lying on television and lying repeatedly about the status of whistleblowers and the
oh, yeah, that all whistleblowers have been locked up in a...
Forever.
Forever in a cell.
In cells forever. And they're incommunicado, and that's what always happens to every whistleblower, no matter what, because Barack Obama's worse than Cheney. And, you know, that's such a phenomenally dumb lie to tell.
Easy to disprove.
But you keep repeating it. And you know, when your boyfriend gets caught or your spouse gets caught or your partner, whatever he is, gets caught, and the first words out of your mouth is, he's not a journalist, he's no part of this, leave him alone. And then your story changes to, how dare you attack journalism? Why, my goodness, he's obviously a journalist. He's obviously part of the journalist. You know, you can't do that, Glenn.
When I found out on the same day that Glenn Greenwald was screaming he's not a journalist, that his plane ticket was paid for by The Guardian, it just sort of, that was it for me.
Either one of those stories is fine.
Yeah.
But when you are the most famous reporter on earth, and he currently is, and when you're reporting on a consequential story, and when you are clearly trying to grind a political axe and beat up people on the left for not being pure enough and not being spiteful enough, not hating the right people in the right way, and not be willing to see that Barack Obama is the worst thing that ever happened to America.
I'm going
to
cut you off.
Then I have a problem.
We're actually talking about Glenn Greenwald.
I know. Isn't that weird how that happens?
I want to talk about Rand Paul for just a minute. Rand Paul had a coffee clatch on the steps of the Capitol building this morning.
He did.
He wants everyone to just get along. He invited senators to come. Apparently, four people who are not reporters showed up.
Yeah.
And people from Wonkette showed up, and they weren't allowed to be there because they didn't have press credentials. Yeah.
Speaking of journalists, not journalists, yeah.
So they just took pictures of the back of Rand Paul's head posterity.
It's an interesting place, the back of his head. Yeah.
And they also illustrated how incredibly short he is and how saggy his butt is, because that's all they had to report on because they weren't allowed to talk to him.
Well, that's breaking news.
That'll show you how to treat a Wonkette reporter. But yeah, Rand Paul just wants everybody to get along all of a sudden.
Uh-huh. Good for him.
Yeah. And maybe if we just talk to one another more about which part of Barack Obama's legacy we're going to erase.
Yes.
Because we're good at erasing legacies, damn it.
We're really good at it.
We erased George W. Bush's entire legacy as if he never existed. So why can't we erase most of Barack Obama's legacy? Well,
and we erased and then rewrote and then re-erased and then rewrote Bill Clinton's legacy repeatedly.
Oh, and don't get me started about Ronald Reagan. He's got a whole new legacy that wasn't actually his legacy.
Not at all. Bears no relationship. No, remember when Bill Clinton
we create our own reality.
and keep updating it.
Yeah.
You know? You have to check to see which version we've released today. I remember when Bill Clinton was the worst president in history and a socialist and a communist and a murderer and a monster. Now he's the beloved elder of the party. Why can't y'all be more like Bill Clinton? We could get along with him. And it all depends. That whole thing rests on the fact that half of our electorate or a third of our electorate are lobotomized. They literally do not remember what they said yesterday. So you can't hold them to it because they never said that George Bush was the greatest president ever. They never were in favor of Iraq. That the whole deficit
thing. They didn't yell 4 more years in 2006.
No.
CPAC convention.
That never happened. None of that ever happened. And George Bush never increased the deficit. He never lied us into a war. There was never a Medicare benefit that he pushed through.
Yeah, the deficit is all Barack Obama's fault. Yeah. So.
And so the point we're getting at is, I believe, arguing with people who sincerely believe this is pointless. It's just pointless because there is absolutely you can argue with a stick of butter and get the same results. There is nothing going on in their brains that resembles rational thought. So you can't really I'm indignant at liberals who keep getting upset that but see, here's this really elegant argument. Why aren't you being persuaded by my argument? And Reince Priebus, you know, rolls his eyes and goes blah 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 and talks about freedom because we're not the same species anymore. We use the same language, but we don't, our realities are completely divorced from each other now. And the idea that you will hold me to what I said yesterday, even though I'm going to hold you to what your party did in 1952, is alien to them. So
let's talk for a minute. I want you to read the quote from Marlon Stutzman, a conservative congressman from Indiana, because this is the crux of everything. We're gonna lead with the lead today.
Another edition of Guess Which Party.
Oh, you won't have any problem with guessing which party. Well, this is a Tea Party Republican from Indiana.
Well, actually, there were two Tea Party Republicans who did remarkably stupid things today.
Yeah.
But
you want to mention Randy Neugebauer?
Yeah, I do.
Republican of Texas. That was just funny.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It was funny. But and there's video of that. But Marlon Stutzman.
Well, why don't you mention Randy first? Do Randy first.
Randy Neugebauer from the great state of Texas that brought you Ted Cruz and George W. Bush. Except George W. Bush doesn't exist. So my apologies. There was never a George W. Bush. He berated a park ranger for not doing their job. And you should be ashamed of yourself. You should feel ashamed for not doing your job and keeping the parks open. Congressman Neugebauer and the rest of his people are the reason the park is closed. And he stopped to berate a working person who may or may not even be getting paid today for not overruling unilaterally what he and his GOP goons did. Mind you, Congressman Neugebauer is a member of the Party of Personal Responsibility. And the fact that no one walked up and just punched him in the fucking face is just a miracle of self-restraint on the part of everyone else on the face of the earth. So congratulations, rest of humanity. I applaud you for not giving this guy a rap right in his fucking mouth. Speaking of which,
Marlon Stutzman from Indiana.
Gave the game away.
Yes, he really did.
Completely baffled they are by their own. Because they flung themselves off a cliff because Ted Cruz told them to.
Yep.
And now
he disappeared. He went to the Four Seasons Hotel.
Yeah.
He's to rest.
He's down. You know? And somebody made a really good point about what is it about Texas? We have a fake Texan who got everybody whipped up, ran him off a cliff, and now he's in hiding.
Yeah.
It's the legacy of George W. Bush.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but Marlon Stutzman don't know what he wants, but he knows he wants it now.
Well, and he does want Barack Obama not to be president anymore.
He wants
or
he,
ever.
He's willing to fund the federal government to create a time machine to go back and make sure Barack Obama never existed.
Yeah.
But he said, and I quote, "We're not going to be disrespected. We have to get something out of this." And I don't know what that even is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's
at this point, it's all about saving face.
And mind you, 40,000 of your fellow citizens thought this guy was brain wizard enough to put him in Congress. So
now I want to ask you a question about Barack Obama.
Yeah.
This is sort of the crux of where we need to go with this, I think. The government shutdown.
Yep.
One of the things that Barack Obama clearly has decided to do is not stoop to their levels.
Right.
He's not threatening. He's not threatening to use the 14th Amendment, which personally, if I were running things, and I'm not, I would have Pelosi and Reid and a bunch of senators and actually have the Senate pass a resolution requesting that the president invoke the 14th Amendment.
And I'd have a whole bunch of constitutional lawyers to back me up.
Yep.
And then I'd go about impeaching Ted Cruz.
Yeah. There you go.
For challenging the full faith and credit of the United States
government. United States of government. Yep.
Yep.
But of course, Ted Cruz would use that to raise money because that's why he's doing everything.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, by the way, I have two other predictions to make. One is that Michelle Bachmann will continue to raise money on her own PAC, whether she's a congresswoman or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the whole point. She can make 10 times more money for her cause, quote unquote, by just doing the rubber chicken circuit for the GOP.
Forever. Yeah.
And I also predict that Andrew Sullivan will endorse Chris Christie.
Yeah. You heard it here first.
Yeah. But I want to talk about Barack Obama. So he's decided not to stoop to their level and not issue threats or, get angry. I mean, he tends to be cool cucumber and that he's made this decision.
I do have one piece of advice for him, though.
Well.
Use the force, Barry.
Use the force, Barry. Okay. The question is, is it okay to watch your enemies destroy themselves, or should you be trying to destroy your enemies? And not that the Republicans aren't doing a really good job of destroying themselves at this point.
Yeah.
But as you said to me this morning, inside the bubble of the GOP, and hat tip to Chris Hayes for name checking the red state section as the source of what Republicans think the public opinion is on everything.
Yeah.
But inside that bubble, no one hears anything else.
Right.
So is this just and John Stewart last night said, isn't it amazing that they have a 10% approval rating and a 90% recidivism rate?
Yeah.
You know, they keep getting reelected and there's no consequences.
Recidivism, I think, applies to criminal offenders, but I think
that's
right.
What I mean.
That's exactly right.
That's why I'm using that word.
Yep. Yeah, it is. Because they think, I'm sure Marlon Stutzman's constituents think he's doing a bang up job.
Yeah.
I'm sure Randy Neurauer from Texas, his people are delighted he's going to stand up for it. And you know, this earlier today, I'm going to steal from Charlie Pierce now, obvious anagram, Reince Priebus. Went on the MSNBC, which baffled me because – and he giggled and rolled his eyes, and he literally talked over the interviewer for a minute and a half. And he lied, and he babbled, and he yapped, and he made little funny faces, and he rolled his eyes, and he talked about freedom, and he talked about Democrats being the problem. And he will – which was – and I watched it long enough, and people were urging me to go watch it. And I was like, why? He will leave here a hero. You went into the lion's den and bearded the liberal lion at MSNBC, at Communist Central. Liberals will cluck about what an asshole he is, and centrists will shrug and go, well, both sides are just as bad. So there is no formula for them to destroy themselves if there is no consequence to them doing stupid things. So, yeah, I thought the Republican Party would self-destruct after 2004, and they didn't. I thought they'd self-destruct after Clinton, and they didn't, because somebody keeps propping them up.
Well, and I wanted to say about Marlon Stutzman, because I did research him a little bit.
Uh-huh.
He won his race in 2010 with 63% of the vote.
Yeah.
And he won in 2012 with 67% of the vote.
Yeah.
So he's winning by
numbers.
By double. He's winning 2/3 of the vote in his very, very safe district.
Yeah.
So he can come out and say, well, we don't know what we want, but we don't want to be disrespected.
Yeah. Freedom, bitch. Freedom, bitches. But the flip side, if he ever came out and said, you know, this is kind of silly, maybe we should find a way. Boom, primary tomorrow.
Yep.
Gone. You'd be gone. Yep. So this is the machine they built. So the idea, the question is it better to let your enemies destroy themselves or to assist them in doing so? And once upon a time, I would say in the military world, this comes from Napoleon, I think. Never interrupt your enemy while he's making a mistake, something like that. Sure, on the battlefield, when at the end of the battle somebody loses and goes away, and somebody wins and takes the territory, and then it's over. Mm-hmm. Sure, but in politics, the GOP never loses. They lose elections and then they get propped back up again, and they lose the argument over budget, and then they suddenly we're arguing over a continuing resolution that's at Paul Ryan's levels. They won. They won the argument over the budget because we are now arguing over whether to fund the budget to put the budget at zero and keep the mm-hmm. government shut down, or fund it at Paul Ryan's own levels. Yeah. They won. They keep winning. They keep failing and creating disaster and havoc and ruin. And we on the left keep pointing with and looking with alarm at all the terrible things they're doing. And they keep succeeding in getting what they want done. Because they're willing to destroy things to get what they want. Because destroying things is what they want. Now, if at some point the people who keep propping them up stopped doing that, I'd say, yeah, let them destroy themselves. But Newt Gingrich is the poster boy for screwing the pooch over and over and over and over again. The great granddaddy of hate speech on the right, the great granddaddy of shutting the government down, the father of a thousand wingnut lies. And where will you find Newt Gingrich on any given Sunday? On Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, yeah.
Being propped up by David Gregory. You'll find him on Meet the Press 30 days to the day after whatever latest atrocity he's committed in the public square, and David Gregory will reliably not ask him about that at all, but refer to him as Mr. Speaker. And keep feeding him softball questions because David Gregory is a whore.
Yeah.
And this
is where the problem really is, and where we hope we can make a difference. I was so impressed this week with certain people on Facebook who, when the cycle was on, the
awful, awful cycle,
Abby Huntsman asked the question, you know, go to our Facebook page and answer the question. What do you think about, are you optimistic about whether they'll be able to compromise and what will happen with the follies in Washington? The follies? Yeah. You know, because it's a Broadway show.
Yeah.
And it is just a show.
It's just a show.
As far as the mainstream Beltway media is concerned, this is a game and a show. It's not people's lives at all. And their jobs are secure. Nobody's going to furlough Abby Huntsman off of the cycle.
But she was. But people did push back a little bit.
They did. Well, on Facebook, I was very impressed. I went over there to let them know what I thought of the word follies.
Yep.
And several people had written before me and said, you know, the Republican Party is taking infant formula out of the mouths of WIC babies, and you're calling this follies. Mm-hmm. How dare you? Yep. And it really, that is where you can push back, and that's where social media helps. David Gregory is in trouble when you see it on Twitter that, oh, look, Newt Gingrich is on my TV. And there's enough of a pushback and a continual pushback. I know that your Irish heart wants to be hopeless about this.
I want to punish him. and not just because I'm a vengeful person, but I'm not really a vengeful person. But like Gus Fring in Breaking Bad, he never cut someone's throat just out of spite. He cut their throat as an example to other people that they shouldn't ever, ever, ever cross him. I think the problem we have with our press is that
there's no downside. They have to keep doing what they're doing in order to collect that paycheck.
No,
in the direct deposit.
There's no upside to being honest.
Right.
There's no upside to telling the truth. There's absolutely no accountability for people at NBC to lie to you about. And it's so prevalent that it's funny. I mean, when Rachel Maddow is interviewing a couple of days ago, Congressman Rigel, I think, one of the 10 reasonable congressmen she could find on the right to talk about government shutdown, practically the first words out of his mouth were, what, Blue Gal?
Yeah.
Well, both sides, you know, are really to blame. You know, both sides are really, you know, this whole gerrymandering thing, you know, the left does it too. And, you know, I think it's both branches of government and it's both parties.
Yeah.
And she didn't reach through the camera and strangle his fucking ass.
Yep.
This morning, Andrea Mitchell is hopping mad that CIA analysts, 70% of CIA analysts are being laid off, are being furloughed. What she really means is, oh my God, people who live in my neighborhood are losing their job. Now this is a fucking disaster.
Yeah. They can't come to dinner tonight because they're too worried about their paycheck not coming next week.
Oh my God, people in D.C. are losing their jobs? Yeah. Not people out in the hinterland where they're not really human anyway. They're just poor people who steal from us anyway and give the money to black people. But actual people I know are losing their job? Holy crap, this is a disaster.
This can't happen. Yes.
But who did she blame? Everybody.
Both sides. Everybody. Why can't we just get together and resolve this?
You know, now it's a Photoshop thing. Now it's just so sad. And, you know, the Republicans are doing it, but really everyone does this. And there is nobody waiting outside her dressing room to kneecap her and drag her in front of David Gregory and say, and if you ever, ever open your fucking pie hole again and lie to us, this is what's going to happen to you. And her head is on a pike. That's
and you mean that in a Breaking Bad fiction sort of way, don't you, Dirk?
But somebody, no one.
There needs to be a consequence of. Oh, you know what happened? Mark Halperin got fired and he will never be on this network again. You know why? Because he used the words both sides when it clearly wasn't both sides.
And we are journalists here, not whores. Yeah. And the problem with this, and this is where, again, we're never going to move the right an inch. They're crazy. They're gone. They're dead to us. They're just going to do what they do. The only place any movement is possible is in the middle, is the people who keep insisting that it's really a curse on both your houses. It's really a plague on both your houses. And that's one of the things that irritates me about Greenwald, is he really does say the way forward for our country is to have Democrats lose elections. Mm-hmm. And eventually things will get so bad that something, a libertarian revolution. But it's such a delusional.
Well, class, we have had a libertarian revolution. It was called 2009.
Yeah. Yep.
And the revolution was in the media with Glenn Beck taking over. It happened.
Yeah. Well, after the Tea Party won, Glenn Greenwald said, we need more of this. And he said he respects the Tea Party because they actually physically threaten people. They actually show up to rallies with shotguns and machine guns, and they talk in a very intimidating way that actually causes lawmakers to feel physical fear. And that's a good thing.
According to Glenn Beck,
Glenn Greenwald.
Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald said that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get my Glenns mixed up here.
No, well, it's you know, I prefer Glenn Libet myself, but that's
by just, the way.
Or Glenn Livid right now.
I want to get back to this Republican congressman from Indiana one more time.
Yes.
Arlen Stutzman.
Yes.
Because on his campaign fundraiser splash website, he says this sentence. On October 1st, millions of Americans will be forced to enroll in Obamacare. And as we've seen, all these millions of Americans have been forced to go on those websites and shut down the websites with all of their traffic. And David Plouffe is in the White House basement saying, I'm giving her all she's got, Captain.
Captain, I can't take no more. We need four more servers down here. Falling apart. And that's because it's people are
popular.
People are mad
that they can't sign up because their asshole red state governor has not accepted the Medicaid expansion.
So here's the thing.
So there are people falling through the cracks because the governors of these red states is depriving them of health care.
Yeah, on purpose.
On purpose. And I'm really curious as to what's going to happen when these hospitals start sending the states a bill and start suing them for emergency room care. Yeah. And the balanced budget amendment that these states have, you have to raise taxes to pay off these hospitals.
Yep.
And then what?
Well, Obama. Freedom. And Obama, and we'll find somebody else to cut. We'll cut some schools. We'll cut some lunch programs.
That's the thing. That's what
we'll cut some parks. I mean, there's plenty
of privatize the lottery.
Yeah. We already did that.
Yeah, too late.
There's plenty of poor people out there to beat up, and plenty of minorities to blame things on. And they will never run out, even if they have to, as we've learned over the last 20 years, invent them out of whole cloth. They will find a welfare queen. They will find a young buck eating a T-bone steak and say, see, that's where your money's going. Goddamn Obama. And again, those people can't be budged. And the problem with me focusing on someone like David Gregory, the thing that irritates me, is that because he sets the tone, the rest of the food chain follows. David Gregory never asks Republicans serious questions and never, ever challenges the predominant Beltway lie that both sides are always equally to blame. But Rachel Maddow, David Gregory's colleague, never calls out David Gregory for lying, which she damn well knows he's doing. She inveighs against it. She talks about it. She berates people. She talks about this horrible, horrible both-siderism and how awful it is and on and on and on. She never, ever, ever mentions that her colleague three doors down from her is the patient zero of this disease. Never happens.
I want to wrap up this podcast by talking about public service.
So soon?
Yeah. Public service, which seems to be dead because we don't have Republicans anymore. We have millionaires.
Yeah.
And they're making a lot of money on corruption, indirect corruption and direct corruption.
Uh-huh.
And there is no sense of serving anyone but your gerrymandered constituency that doesn't want you to give things to Black people. And I do want to give big kudos this week to Joan Walsh.
Yeah.
For saying what we've been saying for 200 episodes, which is, this is about the Confederacy. This is about race. This is about a vision of government where government's evil and government's wrong because government gives free stuff to Black people and therefore steals from us.
Right.
And it's our country and we want our country back.
Mooching Black people. That's right. That's right. That's and that's the bumper sticker for the GOP.
Yep.
I would like to just modify that sentiment a little bit. Once upon a time, when I worked closely with various parts of government, I got to see up close and personal people like Ted Kennedy's staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were really dedicated public servants, but they're staff. They're not elected. And I got to see up close and personal people who were public servants in jobs that they'd been hired to do, appointed to do, contracted to do, who worked crazy long hours, care deeply about what they believe in, whether it was childhood hunger or immunization or education or helping ex-offenders or helping drug addicts. There is a body of people at the staff level, at the non-governmental organization level, the not-for-profit level, who are amazingly dedicated people. We see them at our church all the time. But at the elected level, the idea that public service, to run for office and serve honorably to help your government, is such a dead letter now.
Yeah. And Congressman Gingrey, 2 weeks ago, last week, I'm only making $178,000 here. I'm stuck here. Making there's your public servant right there.
Yeah. Just marking time until he can go collect a check at the Heritage Foundation.
Right.
And because that's why you go, that's why if you're a conservative, that's why you go into government. You go into trash as much as the place as you can get your hands on. Kick as many poor people in the throat as you possibly can. Pour as much sand in the engine as possible to go collect a paycheck on K Street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your career arc right there. That's what you dream about. And you'll
be replaced. That's the sad part, is you'll be replaced by another gerbil in the wheel who will have just as safe a seat and do exactly what you did.
Who's dumber and more vicious than you because the primary in your district just got that much harder to say anything nice about anything. And
I guess what I want to leave our, because I think both of us are really pissed and really depressed about this government shutdown and the way things are going. I want to leave our listeners on our 200th episode with a message of thanks, first of all, and also with a message of hope that we continue to be servants, that all of us work hard to serve our fellow man and take some emotional distance from the evil that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Bible bitch found today, 1 John 3. If anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity, how can the love of God be in that man or woman? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but in actions and in truth. And that's the message that I want to leave people with, which is it's about love. It's about working. And that's what I really liked about those people on Facebook is they kept a very clear head about it. They heard something on the media that was clearly wrong and clearly designed to obfuscate what's really going on. There are some greedy people who hate their fellow man, who are racist, and I'm just going to say it, the race issue is key to this.
And who want to erase the existence of Barack Obama.
Of a Black president.
They want him gone from the history books, period.
Yep.
And the way to do that is to make him fail. And
the way to counter that, I think, is take some emotional distance and work. And whether you go on Facebook to counter that or whether you, and I'm not saying just be a keyboard warrior here, but give of yourself, volunteer, fight the good fight, make a difference today.
Yeah.
And then, You know how I feel. I feel God is working his purpose out. So that's me. But I don't want to get all preachy here because I'm not that way.
Yeah. And I'm just
all the atheists are getting into heaven before I am. I always say that. Always say that.
I'm much more about, look.
You want to cut people's throats, strip glass.
No. I want to live in a society that I admire and respect. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is to find something that's broken and try to fix it.
Yep.
And keep trying until you drop. And
I want to thank you, Driftglass.
I want to thank you, Blue,
for being such a good husband and father to our kids. And, you know, our 200th episode, it's a nice time to tell you how much I love you.
Oh, I love you too, baby.
And we had some nice emails this week from people who said they listen with their significant other or spouse or partner or whatever.
Yeah.
Look at that person. If you're listening with a friend or a lover or whatever, look at that person in the eye and tell them you love them.
Yeah, for God's sake.
For God's sake.
I love you too, baby.
We appreciate you guys so much. And this is just the beginning. We're 200 episodes old and we're going on. Thanks
really?
To you.
Oh,
it's a miracle. Isn't it a miracle when you get $5 in the mail? It's just.
It is a miracle.
I want a full disclosure. We pay our electric bill and part of our cable bill with the money you sent in. That's what we do.
Yeah, we do.
It's a miracle that we're able to cover our electric bill every month with contributions from you, our listeners. And we thank you so much for that. Should we close?
I think we must. I was going to talk a lot more about all the people that make me angry and all my pet peeves and my ingrown toenails and my various upsets and agita, but
we can play that violin again next week.
But sadly, you have forced me to be a better person than I normally would be.
But you've got to pick up a child in 10 minutes.
I do. Well, you know, I bet you've guilted me into feeling better about humanity. So congratulations.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. All right.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is named Come Here.
Okay. Not Come Here.
No, Come Here.
Uh-huh.
That's a great name. That's such a minimalist name for a cat. Come here.
I should talk about Cordwainer Smith.
Yeah, yeah.
The Ballad of Lost Camel, which is the story of a genetically engineered
goose. Not Cordwainer Bird.
No, the actual Cordwainer Smith.
Cordwainer, yeah.
The Ballad of Lost Camel. And it was the cat people, the people who were genetically traceable, I believe were always identified by the C apostrophe in front of their name.
Oh.
So, yeah, baby. Boo, did I just blow your mind?
Come here. We have a picture of Come here at our website and Facebook page. Come here has glowy eyes.
Yes.
You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. You know, we love hearing from you. We really, really, really do. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Hey, Vince Gilligan, the Internet Kitties would like a walk-on part on Better Call Saul.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
I think Internet Kitty should walk across Saul's desk.
No, they had dogs running across the screen every now and then. There was an episode called Rabid Dog. There were references to dogs. The second to last episode, the last shot was a strayed dog running across the screen. And those cats feel cheated. They feel like, you know, you're not really a fair employer. You're discriminating against the gatos. So
what's up with that?
What's up with that? Maybe a couple of cats on Better Call Saul. Nobody gets hurt, you know?
And welcome to Science Fiction University. Our first letter is from Eric, and he just finished reading Starship Troopers.
Okay, you got about 20 years on me, Eric, but I'll give it a shot.
He's going to start with an easy one, he says. Number one, What rank did Johnny's high school teacher have in mobile infantry?
Oh, either a master sergeant or colonel.
Lieutenant colonel.
Lieutenant colonel, yep.
Number two, while Johnny is in basic training, he witnesses a hanging.
Yes.
As the man is stripped of his uniform, the Boot Regimental Band plays a song.
Danny Deever.
You're very good.
And they play it with their drums sheathed to make it even more somber. Yep.
And
Boom, baby.
Who wrote Danny Deever?
I don't know.
Rudyard Kipling.
Okay.
Who are the speakers in the poem?
Oh, I don't know.
Files on Parade and Color Sergeant.
Yep.
But the fact that you knew Danny Deever just floors me.
Okay. Ah!
Number three, Johnny had a prior relationship with both his platoon sergeant on the drop to Planet P.
Yes.
And the drop to the bug home planet, Klendathu. I saying that right? Klendathu?
Yeah, close enough.
Okay. What were those relationships? First of all, what was his relationship with his platoon sergeant on the drop to Planet P?
Oh, I think he was his drill instructor.
Yep. Instructor in boot camp. All right.
His DI. Yep.
Yeah. All right. And when he dropped to the bug home planet, who was his platoon sergeant?
One of them was his father.
His dad. That's right.
I think his dad worked for him. Yeah. Because by that time, you know, it was his platoon sergeant. By that time, he was the old man. He was the leader. That's how fast people were being killed off. He had been promoted to the rank of lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And his
father was the one who thought it was a silly idea for him to enlist in the first place.
Wow.
Right up until Earth got the crap bombed out of it.
Yeah.
And we're in the middle of a war, and suddenly it's kind of like a good idea.
Like you have to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, this is an opinion question. What does Driftglass think of the society portrayed in the book where citizenship is earned through service, even if the service is counting the fuzz on a caterpillar by touch?
Yeah.
It's Israeli, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. I think that there's a trick in the novel, as I recall, where Johnny's asked in his class, because the first half of the book is him in class learning about theoretically what happened before and so on and so forth. And Robert Heinlein gets away with a lot of stuff there. You know, we had this great civilization and it collapsed. And then basically he's talking about us. And it was incredibly disastrous. And it was, you know, civil wars and it was just medieval. Until a group of veterans got together and they trusted each other a little bit. And they're the ones who built the new government.
Right.
And they said, look, here's a rule. You got to be one of us to be part of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of cheats. He cheats quite a lot by saying, nobody knows why it works. It just works.
Yeah.
You
got to suspend your disbelief on this one.
Well, even though, I mean, he has an instructor ask Johnny, as I recall, why does our society work so well?
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny gives the sort of the textbook answer, and he says, the teacher says, the answer is it works because it works. Nobody's quite sure why. It sort of does. But the idea that you are invested in the health of your society and that should be important to build into your citizens, I think is completely healthy. I don't think military service should be mandatory. The idea of militarizing voting is a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that if you want to have a say in how your society is run, you have to be invested in its health and long-term longevity. Mm-hmm. I think is a legitimate position to hold. I tend to think the idea of national service out of high school, Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, Teach for America, something like that, is an excellent idea.
Well, and that's why you and I are very driven to make sure our children volunteer for things.
Yeah, yeah. You can't have a society where a majority of the people in it don't want it.
Yep.
and
they see us volunteering all the time. They see us volunteering all the time at school, at church, in the community, doing art fairs. You know, you and I volunteer a lot.
Yeah.
To give of our time and ourselves. And part of that is because we're broke.
Yeah.
we give our hands. But
yeah, and we can. I mean, part of that is you know, I went and listened to a presentation by a gentleman a couple of days ago. At a church group. Yes, I'm a dirty liberal who goes to church. he made a really good presentation, and a lot of what he said jived with careers I had before.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think you can say what he does. He refurbishes computers for poor people.
Yeah.
And gets them internet access.
Yeah.
So,
which I think is just a wonderful idea.
Great
just
idea.
A wonderfully noble idea. And
it's all volunteer.
I think he could use my hands, and I'm going to probably, if I can.
Oh, your IT experience. Yeah. He probably could. Yeah.
Or whatever. Or training people. I've done that before. Or, you know, helping them get job skills. I've done that before. I think I could be of value to this organization. And so that's one of the places you'll probably hear about me volunteering in the next month or two. But you really do have to have a society where at least a majority of the people are invested in it long term.
Yeah.
And but, you know, in a novel, a novelist is going to slant the table in the direction they want the story to go.
Yes.
So I can't fault Heinlein for that. You know, he has other stories where he has people who are transgender, literally a man transplanted into a woman's body, his brain into her body, and then her spirit is there. He has stories about line marriages, people that have radically different ways of organizing families, where you buy into the family, where you have multiple wives, where you have multiple fathers. He has stories where a brother and sister grow up to get married. And in the conditions under which the story is told, it kind of makes sense. So he tampered a lot with a lot of different social structures, sort of seeing what worked. But he was a military guy. And I can't really fault a military guy from basically World War I.
Yeah.
Thinking that this...
Here's one way to make this work. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
can we switch to Philip K. Dick now?
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. That's going to whiplash.
Michael wrote us. And thank you, Michael. I recently read... I love all these people that are writing us who have read books.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Read more stuff.
I recently read Philip K. Dick's We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
Uh-huh.
Oh. One thing that amused me was in a world that had cars driven by robots and the ability to implant memories, Douglas Quayle was going to write a letter of complaint, quote, as soon as he could get to his typewriter.
Yes. Yes.
I was wondering if you could comment on similar. Now, he says, Michael says, similar advances missed by science fiction authors.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was missed by Philip K. Dick or if that was on purpose anachronism. I mean, some of Philip K. Dick, I really feel like he just wants to have the noir aspect there, present there. And the typewriter, he consciously put that in there rather than making it something else in order to keep a noir vision to his story.
It could very well be. I mean,
Can you comment on similar advances missed by science fiction authors?
Sure.
Perhaps ones more central to the story.
To the best of my knowledge, of all the good writers I've read, and Philip Dick is a really good writer. I highly recommend his stuff, even his exegesis stuff and his essays. They're all really good, and you spot them as Philip K. Dick stories immediately. None of them are sloppy men or women. They're all really meticulous craftspeople. Even George Martin, who wrote this big sprawling thing after a couple hundred pages, had no idea what to do with it. That became Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
So these are meticulous people who have probably certainly drafted their material, redrafted it, gone over it, combed over it, recombed over it, had readers read it, first readers read it, had editors read it. So whatever's in there made it through a series of editorial steps. Mm-hmm. So if it's in there, he meant it to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the entire idea of having miniaturized computers small enough to carry around with you, was missed by everybody up until the 70s.
Yeah, iPhones, just no way. Yeah.
Well, just a computer on your desktop was unheard of. It was just an absurd notion.
Mm-hmm.
There's this wonderful story that Robert Heinlein tells about him and his wife going to JPL. I'm probably repeating myself. Talking about how they calculated the ballistics of the moons of Mars. For a scene in a book, it's a one paragraph, but it has to be a certain way because the moons don't do a certain thing. They have to know how to pilot around them. And he explains how he and his wife took out butcher block paper and wrote the formulas and a long, long, long formula. And then they swapped and they checked each other's math. And the very, very, very smart people, the literal rocket scientists who admired Robert Heinlein very much, asked him, why didn't he just use a computer? And he said, son, this is in 1948, 49. Mm-hmm. There were no computers.
Yeah.
So the whole digital revolution really jump-started. There was a mention of a supercomputer called Salamanesser, I believe, in Stand on Zanzibar, and that was the 70s. There was a mention of a similar pocket portable computer in another John Bruner story that escapes me at the moment. But that really, the whole idea of infusing portable technology with you as a personal tool didn't happen until the 80s,
except in Dick Tracy.
Well, yes. Isn't that ironic? Dick Tracy was the one who could
Dick
do that.
Dick Tracy had the watch phone with the TV on it. Yeah.
And people point out that, you know, everybody predicted the moon landing, but almost nobody, someone has corrected me, almost nobody predicted television on the moon.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to hear about it on radio.
Mm-hmm.
In Robert Heinlein's stories, one of his characters that appears a few times is Andrew Libby. I think his name's Andrew, but his nickname is Slipstick because he's really good at working a slide rule. And so he's on this incredibly advanced spacecraft and he's working out on a slide rule what we should do next because that was the tool that he had.
Let me ask you something, Driftglass. When you were in junior high, Uh-huh. Were you taught to use a slide rule?
I was.
I was too.
We had a giant one above the board.
Yep. And I was taught to do that also.
Yeah.
And it amazes my kids. It amazes our kids that we didn't have computers and that we had black and white TVs when we were kids.
But I did have a computer. I did have a computer when I was in fifth or sixth grade, Blue Gal. I did. It was
fifth grade.
And this is what I use to bamboozle the children because it's always fun fooling small children. I had a rock computer, and it was simply a series of punched cards with open or closed holes in them and a series of plastic sticks. And so you'd measure a bunch of stuff about the rocks, and you had a bunch of holes on the top of the computer, quote-unquote computer. And if it was this instead of that, you put a stick in that hole, and if it were this instead of that, you put one in there but not in there. And the choice, the selection you made would permit one and only one card to drop out from the rest. And thus,
yes.
It was a computer. It was an actual thing that yielded results based on input. And it had the basics of a computer. It had an input device, an output device, a calculating device, more or less. But the, you know, spaceships used to have reel-to-reel tapes on them.
And
even in Star Trek, I mean, there's a lot of implications there. But Mr. Spock trying to fool the captain's, you know, people into believing it's the captain's voice, had these little plastic blocks that he would shove in and out of computers. So there were an awful lot of things people missed because it's not predictive. It was speculative. So it was never the entire future is going to look like this. It was one quarter of the future is going to look like this. And just the number of things that really smart people got right about industry, about advertising, about mass communication. There was one part I remember in one of the early Lazarus Long stories, when the word gets out that there's this cult, this group of long-lived people living in America who were living to be hundreds of years old. And it was simply a result of breeding experiment. They didn't have any magic drugs. The television, I remember them saying that the media lifted the ban on using inflammatory language.
Oh, wow.
To let the media demonize these people and basically call for them to be lynched or torched or locked up. Mm-hmm. But the idea that there was this in the future, somebody said, you know, there's certain language you shouldn't be allowed to use when you're reporting the news. And we're going to just prohibit that, was one of those odd things that I thought, well, Heinlein got that one right. Of course, that would mean Fox News, no Fox News in the future, but I can't see that as a bad place. Anyway, then, and there's lots of examples of that. But I just want to say that pretty much everybody who got involved in NASA at a young age probably read Isaac Asimov.
Yeah.
And the benefits and the one of the wonderful things that Heinlein did, I believe, was testify in front of Congress about all the spin-off technologies from NASA, all the things that saved his life, the remote telemetry of health and the fact that you have synchronous satellites. That's the way you can have radar. That's the way you can have cell phones. All these science fiction-y ideas are out there now, and they're saving people's lives. They're making the world a better place. They're making people healthier. They're doing all these wonderful things. And he told them in a storyteller way to make it clear to budget cutters that if you cut this stuff, you are cutting your own throat, because basic research always pays off, and NASA has paid for itself 100 times over. And really, what we lack right now in the great government shutdown are those storytellers.
Yeah.
People who can explain why this is incredibly stupid and suicidal, and people who think it's a good idea should be locked in a padded room until they know.
We're going to get to our political podcast in a minute.
Yeah.
Next week, I want people to listen to episode 201. And I'd like you to start thinking about this drift class for next week.
It's our 200th episode, really?
Yeah, this week.
Time flies.
In episode 201 for Science Fiction University next week, we're going to read a letter from Daniel. And Daniel wants to know what you think are the 5 most underrated science fiction writers and the 5 most overrated science fiction writers, along with the most underrated and overrated science fiction movies.
Oh, can I include myself in that list?
Yeah, you are the most underappreciated science fiction
writer. I am.
That's not in his letter.
Everybody shed a tear. Or just send money. I will take that out. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
you.